Okay, before I go further in the what we were doing last week, I just have a little more on this topic, but a question was raised last week, and I think it should be addressed. I think it's extremely important, and it's something which I think most people are do not have a clear understanding of, and that is that the question of faith. What do we mean in Torah when we say faith? What exactly does faith mean? Now, what I'd like to say is that the idea of faith that the religious world is familiar with is really a Christian idea. It's not a Judaic idea. And I will tell you simply why. Because the idea of faith that the religious world at large speaks of is the concept that even though things don't appear to be, or even though reason or logic goes against, I don't have any proofs, or I don't have any really valid evidence for my religious beliefs, I still have faith. And that is considered the very essence of the religious gesture. The religious gesture is to believe in spite of the fact that there is no evidence. That's the general idea of faith. As a matter of fact, Professor Campbell, Joseph Campbell. He tells a famous, he's a famous professor in comparative religion, and he tells a story that he was at a resort, and there was a priest that was sitting with him by the swimming pool, and this priest asked him, "Do you believe in?" You believe in Christianity? And he said, you believe in God? He says, no, I can't say that I do. So the priest says, well, I guess I can't prove to you that there is a God logically. So Joseph Campbell said to him, and if you could, then there would be no reason to have faith. Isn't that true? So the priest acquiesced. But this concept is a concept in Christianity that is not a Torah concept at all. On the contrary, according to Torah, if you cannot know something, if you cannot really have any knowledge of something, to make yourself believe in it is totally nonsensical. Because that means my mind doesn't tell me this thing is true. So how could I have faith in something if there's no reason for me to begin to believe in it in the first place? The whole idea is circular. In other words, if I don't know that something is so, he's telling me that even though I don't know it's so, I'm supposed to have faith in it. But why should I have faith in it if I don't know that it exists? It does not make any sense. This idea of faith that the religious world at large accepts and considers to be a measure of religion was really invented by the man-made religions for a very simple reason. Because the man-made religions aren't based in reality, and there is no basis in reality for them whatsoever. So there's no way that you could verify anything that they say, since it's pure imagination. Now, they know this, and the only way to sustain themselves is to say that even though there's no verification, this is the religious obligation to believe. And they make that into a virtue, as if believing in something for no reason at all is a virtue, and God wants you to do this. But, of course, the question is, how do you know God wants you to do this if you don't know there's a God? So, again, you're caught up in this crazy, ridiculous circle. This idea is against Torah, and it could be easily demonstrated from the Torah itself. Because if you're going to say that that the more religious person has more faith, or the more faith a person has, the more religious he is, which means the less, even though he doesn't know anything about God, but he still has faith in God, he just believes, then it would turn out that Moses was the least religious man in the world. Because Moses spoke to God face to face, in which case he would have no reason to have any faith that God exists, because he knows God exists. It would turn out that the more knowledge he had, the less religious he became. And, of course, when God said to Moses, gather the people in order that they should hear when I speak with you, so that they will know that you are my trusted servant, and what you tell them in my name is true, that I'll see the demonstration at Sinai, this is all crazy. This will all be nonsensical. Because why should God do that? There's no reason to do that. It's, on the contrary, when people see all these miracles and they see Sinai, there's no reason for them to have any faith anymore. You know that it's true. It's verified. It'll turn out that the event at Sinai made a lot of people not religious. But just the opposite is the truth. According to Torah, there's no such thing as belief. Belief is nonsensical. According to Torah, the person's convictions should be based upon knowledge, not on the contrary, based on knowledge and not on belief. As a matter of fact, that's what Moses tells the people when he says to them, after he describes, he tells them why they should continue with the Torah, and he tells them, because you've seen, he goes through again with them the whole event at Sinai. He says, you have seen this. And he says to them, he says, you have been shown, in Deuteronomy 4:35, you have been shown in order that you should know that God is God and that there is none other beside him. So once you've been shown and you see it, he says, now you must abide by that. So what the Torah always demands is verification for any kind of conviction, not empty belief. But of course, a lot of religious people are disturbed by that because they say, well, if that's the case, then it would seem that there's no that religion would be that religion itself. What do you need it for? Because once you know that it's true, once you know that God exists, and you know that He gave you the Torah, so then certainly you're going to do it and you're going to keep it, and then there's no more challenge left. That's what people ask. That's why they say the challenge is to believe in spite of the fact that you don't know anything. But the answer to that question is very simple. The challenge of Torah is for a person to perfect himself. What Torah aims at is not belief. The Torah aims at perfection. And perfection means bringing your entire life in line with the knowledge and the ideas that you have. That's what it means. A drunk knows that...
Rabbi?
Yes.
A question at this point. If you're asked to prove God, prove there is a God, prove that God exists, where's the proof of that?
Okay, let me just finish this point.
Okay, sure.
Okay. What I'm saying is as follows. What I'm saying is that the Torah aims at perfection. People think if I would know God, and I know God exists, that's it. I'd be a religious man the rest of my life. That is only for the simple religion that all they're trying to do is get a person to believe in something. But that's not what Torah is. God is not trying to get us to believe in Him. He doesn't need our belief in Him. What He's trying to do is to get us to perfect ourselves. Now, once you know God exists, once you know the Torah is true, there is a tremendous process that you now have to undergo to perfect yourself, to be able to bring your emotions in line with the reality of the knowledge of Torah. I could know there's God, and I could know the Torah is true, but I could still get jealous when my neighbor has something that I don't have, or when I'm in competition with somebody else and he succeeds and I fail. That's because I'm not perfected. You see, my mind is not. My mind may know the idea that I shouldn't covet my neighbor, but my emotions are not in line with that idea, and I don't even truly understand the idea properly, because if I understood the idea properly, I probably would not have the problem that I have. So the Torah is a long process of perfection. A drunk knows that drinking is a horrible thing that's destroying his life. He knows it. If you ask him, he'll tell you it. But the next day, you're going to find him in the bar. Why? It's not a lack of knowledge. It's a lack of perfection, a lack of character that is the problem. So the Torah, the challenge of the Torah is not to believe in something when you have no reason to believe in it. That's nonsensical. The Torah, as a matter of fact, is very strongly opposed to this kind of thing. Believing in things just because you have feelings about them is idolatrous, and that would lead a person away from Torah. Our Torah is based on knowledge. Okay, now the question. The question was raised, well, what kind of knowledge do we have that God exists? Okay. Now, the knowledge, I assume, that the question that you're raising is not if we, for instance, were at at the event at Sinai, would you have that? Would you have that question? I assume the answer is no, because if anyone witnessed Sinai, then they were there and they witnessed Sinai. They would be convinced that God exists and that God relates to man. Now the question, of course, is what evidence do we have for the event at Sinai? And this, I prepared a special paper on that because it is a little bit involved, and there are many questions that pop up whenever I discuss this this issue. But nevertheless, just to state just...
Rabbi, yes? I need to just interrupt you there before I would ask the question here. If someone come to me and said, prove the existence of God, I don't believe the Bible, I am not religious, but prove the existence of God. I can go to him and say, well, the revelation at Sinai was given to a whole generation of people. They all saw, and their history tells us that they saw. And I'd say, well, that's just a narrow Jewish perspective. Prove to me God outside of religion, or outside of some textbook. Prove the existence of a creator. Prove the existence of God. Okay, that would be the question.
Okay. The question that you raised, I'll get back to the question itself, but the question itself has a weak point. But if you're asking me to prove, when the Torah says that God can be proven outside of the Torah, and the Torah does maintain that that is true, the explanation for that is as follows. It is possible for a human being to come to the clear conviction that God exists, even without the Torah. And that is proven, that the Torah maintains that way, is from Abraham himself. Because Abraham himself did just that. Now, the question that you're raising is, how did Abraham come to that conviction? Okay? Now, I would tell you the answer as follows. In the same way that an Albert Einstein came to that conviction. Now, the question is, how did Albert Einstein come to that conviction? And the answer is that if a person studies the universe and sees the unbelievable wisdom, knowledge, order that prevails in the universe. And when I say that a person sees that, I mean an individual who's steeped in those subjects recognizes that and sees, as Steven Weinberg describes in his book, sees that it's not just facts in the universe, but when you see the scientist, the person who has knowledge of the universe, sees that there is something here which has great beauty, and they can tell that if they pursue this course, they're going to arrive at something of even greater beauty and harmony. Now, the Torah tells us that anyone that sees that, and his intuition shows him that that is so, that same intuition will of necessity say that there must be a source for that beauty. That beauty and that order and that wisdom, and the fact that nothing in the universe is haphazard, would lead a normal person who has no emotional reason to go against the idea, but if he just follows his mind itself, what the mind is telling him, his mind would tell him there must be a spirit, a being behind this magnificent order. It cannot be something which just appears by its out of chaos. Okay? Now, the Torah maintains that there is an intuition that the human mind has, a pure intuition. And if anyone is able to be in tune with that clear intuition, if he doesn't have any prejudices, then he will have to come to the conclusion that there is a creator behind that universe. And that is the way Abraham came to his conclusion. Now, it is true that if a person, the only person that will not come to that conclusion is a person who has some kind of problem. A person who, for instance, I'll give you certain examples. I have read scientists who deny God. Indubitably, when you read about what they mean by God, you'll find that the dear idea of God And it's usually the Christian idea of God, which is really an infantile notion of a projected father figure. And of course, if a person has that kind, if that is the idea of, if that's his idea of God, then there are two types of emotional responses. Some people embrace that idea because it's convenient for them, because they have fear, they're afraid, so they embrace that idea. Other people are angry. There is always a, there is a certain tension that exists between a father-child relationship. And some people embody one side, in which case they'll become very religious. Other people who have the antagonistic side developed will reject God, that idea of God. But that is inevitably because the idea of their idea of God is an infantile idea. As a matter of fact, it's very interesting that the Torah equates atheism with idolatry. And the reason is that idolatry and atheism are two sides of one coin. The idolater is really the one that believes in God. Actually, what he believes in is God made in the image of man, as Isaiah describes it. After he gives a vivid description, Isaiah 43, of idolatry, he says, he makes him in the image of man and the glory of man to dwell in his house, which means behind the idolatrous mind is a search for man. He makes God in man's image. Now, that kind of a God is one which people invent either because they want certain security, so they invent it and they're drawn to it like a magnet, or else there are people who in the father-child relationship have a lot of tension and antagonism, in which case they reject it. That's why idolatry and atheism are really two sides of one coin. But if a person is not distorted psychologically, then if he's not into these kind of psychological conflicts, if he could rise above that level and he could just use his pure mind and he studies the universe and he sees the magnificence of the knowledge of the universe, he sees the infinity in the knowledge, that sense has to lead his mind to the conclusion that this, there is a spirit behind, as Albert Einstein said, any person, he says, this is a statement that he made, any person who seriously pursues science becomes convinced that there is a spirit in the universe, a spirit vastly superior to that of man, and one before whom we with our humble power, we with our meager powers must feel humbled. That statement that Albert Einstein made is a statement from one of the greatest, if not the greatest scientist of all time, and it is a statement that Maimonides makes, it's a statement that the Torah believes in, and it's a statement that Abraham made. But a person cannot come to that realization of God unless he studies and really has knowledge. You can't make that statement from the without the knowledge. It's impossible. You've got to be really involved in the knowledge of the universe. And every person cannot do that. So it's difficult if you're speaking to an ignoramus and you tell him that... I'm going to give you a demonstration of God. You can't, because he does not have the equipment and he's not in the realm of knowledge. But if you're speaking to a Banish Hoffman, who was a collaborator of Einstein, he will understand what you're talking about. Or if you speak to a rabbi, who was another great physicist. As a matter of fact, in the correspondence that I had, I showed David the correspondence between myself and Steven Weinberg, who's a Nobel Prize physicist, who doesn't believe in God. And his chapter on God, his idea of God is an infantile idea, an idea of a 5 or 6 year old, and he rejects it. And he rejects it because he's an intelligent man, and the most advanced idea that he has is not something that he, with his knowledge at this point, could accept. But I try to demonstrate to him that what he does in science, he's maintaining that there's something beyond that which he sees, which is of infinite beauty. And I told him that Albert Einstein simply maintained that once you go that far, you've got to say there is a spirit behind this whole system. And that is how a person recognizes God from the universe itself. Of course, there are not that many people in the world. Sir Isaac Newton, if you ever read what Sir Isaac Newton writes about God, you would think for a moment you're reading Psalms. It's truly amazing. And as a matter of fact, most of the it's an interesting thing. But there are two groups of philosophers. There are the empiricists, and then there are the idealists. You know, the empiricists are the ones that usually deny God. They're the ones that always claim they only believe in empirical evidence. The fact is that the empirical scientists are the ones that knew least of the physical world, knew least about. They weren't really physicists and they weren't really scientists. And the ones, the idealists, the ones that did believe in God, are precisely the ones that had the most knowledge of the universe. And that's in accordance with Torah. The Torah maintains that a mind that is undistorted, if a person can rise above his psychological conflicts, his emotional tendencies, and can just become objective and follow his intellect, he will conclude, like some of the greatest minds that studied the universe concluded, that there is a spirit behind this fantastic universe that we see, and that we could just begin to comprehend the beauty of the wisdom that's expressed in the universe. That's the idea of God in the universe from Torah. That's the idea of the God of Abraham, and the same idea that Maimonides expresses, and straight throughout the Torah. You'll notice the prophet always talks about, what does the prophet say? The prophet says, look up above at the heavens and see who has created these. That's the verse, I believe, David, where's that verse? Is it Jeremiah? I believe it's in Jeremiah. It's in Hebrew. Look up above and see who has created this. And the King David in Psalms, when he talks about the heavens declare the glory of God. This idea is throughout the prophets, throughout the Psalms, throughout the Torah. So this is the concept. If somebody asks where the proof of God is, that is what the Torah means by the proof of God. Of course, it requires an individual of a certain perfection. He can't be, if he's a distorted individual, if he's not capable of knowledge or study or being objective, or he has no understanding of what intellectual intuition is, then he cannot possibly partake of this. That's one of the reasons that God gave the Torah, because the Torah, everyone, no matter what level, can perfect himself in Torah. Without Torah, only great people like an Abraham was able to see God. But the average person is too small-minded and can't really rise above his personal emotional conflicts. But the Torah was given by God so that every individual, every one of us, can, even on a low level, partake of true ideas and knowledge and start approaching God. And he gave us really a ladder, stepping stones through which we can reach heights that without the Torah, even great minds would not be able to, even greater minds than ours would not be able to reach. Now, the question that David asked before about the proof of Torah from Sinai, that is a proof not just for the first generation, but that is the proof for every generation. Because if you say that you only believe what you see with your eyes, then you have no way of knowing anything in history. You don't know you wouldn't know the First World War occurred. You would not know that Alexander the Great existed. You'd have to deny everything. As a matter of fact, you'd have to deny all of science, because unless you did it yourself in the laboratory, books that you read could have all been fabricated lies. The only reason that you believe these things is because you have a group of people large enough that you may say that it is quite impossible that everybody got together and made up the same fantastic story. If you see people come off a train and they all say there's a fire in the train, you're not going to question them, because you're going to say, well, it does not make sense that there's a mass conspiracy to say there's a fire on this train. But if one person comes off, say, well, maybe this guy is a little wacky or something. But that's why the Torah was given in front of an entire nation, to say that hundreds of thousands of people just got together to say that this event occurred exactly the same way at a certain time is preposterous. And therefore, for the same reason we believe anything occurred that we did not see, you have to believe the event at Sinai. In fact, there is no other religion in the world that makes such a claim. They cannot make such a claim. It's an impossible thing to fabricate. And anywhere along the line, if somebody, let's say, for instance, the Torah was known, let's say, 800 BCE. So if someone, that's approximately 400 years from, 500 years from the time of the date of Sinai. Now, if anyone would come along and just make up such a thing, an individual, you can't make up a story. You could have private prophets. Muhammad could be in a cave and make all kinds of claims. And people could make claims about Jesus to other people who weren't there. You could do all this kind of stuff, but you could never say to a people, you know what? 50 years ago, this is what happened right here in front of all of you. Or 100 years ago, this happened. Or even 1,000 years ago. If anybody would say that 1,000 years ago, the person go to France and say, 1,000 years ago, an event occurred here in front of this entire nation. There was a bomb that exploded here that lit up the whole city at night. People say, well, we would have heard of such a thing by now. If that had occurred, we would have heard of it. Since we did not hear of it, it must be a fabrication. That's why you can't fabricate history. Otherwise, we can make up history as we go along. But the Torah is based exclusively, it is the only religion that's based exclusively on a demonstration in front of the entire nation. And that is any person who, unless the person just wants to say, well, I only accept what I see with my eyes. In which case, if he needs an operation, I wouldn't suggest that he go to see any physician because he doesn't know whether that physician ever went to college. He doesn't know whether there is a medical college. So, in a certain Torah can we could prove God to an individual, but the individual has to be of a reasonable mind. And if he's not, of course, there is no way to prove it, to prove God to us. But what the Torah maintains is that the evidence is there, and if a person is reasonable, he will see that he must at least assume that God exists and that the Torah is true enough to pursue it and to study it. Of course, when a person studies Torah, that's when he really gets to know God, because he sees the truth in the ideas, and then he becomes like the physicist who sees God from the universe. He sees God from Torah itself. That's the that's basically what I have to say on that on that topic, on that point. Any questions?
All right, I think we're about ready to turn the tape yet, or we're close. We can turn the tape now and start back up on the other side. We've got a couple of minutes, or about a minute left, so I'll make the statement that I think you're correct saying that a person with a reasonable mind would come to these conclusions. The problem that I see is that we're dealing a lot of times with unreasonable, irrational individuals.
That's correct.
And so, therefore, you can't convince them of rational logic when they're irrational and illogical.
That's 100% right. And as a matter of fact, I'll tell you an interesting thing. You know, I've discussed the proof of Torah from Sinai with many, many people. Classes, I've even given classes on it. I have never heard a person ask a question that was in any way refuted the proof. But nevertheless, I can tell you, between me and you, that this proof of Torah from Sinai is the least convincing way to get a person into Torah. And I say it, even though, as I said, I've taught it many, many times. And I've never heard a person ask a question that could refute it, not a single person. And I've spoken to many, many intelligent people. What I do often, if I meet a person that says to me, you know, challenges me, well, prove that your religion is right, or prove God, I simply say to them one thing. I say, okay, I'm going to give you a demonstration, but I want to know one thing from you. After I prove it to you, and after I show you that it's true, are you going to change your life and embrace, if I'm speaking to a Jew, let's say, and embrace all 613 commandments and keep every single law of the Torah? And you know what the people say? No. And then I, of course, say, well, then I'm afraid I'm not going to give you my demonstration. Because if I'm dealing with an irrational person to begin with, there is no way that I'm going to be able to convince them. What's going to happen is, at best, is they're going to admit that they can't refute it. But it's not going to be convincing anyways, because there is no honest search for knowledge. There is no sincerity there. And it's just a person that is hung up on denying God and denying Torah, and whatever you're going to say is really not going to do anything. I mean, he's basically, his position is established by his emotions, and he's not moving from that emotional stance. So,
all right, we got a turn right there.
Okay.
We were in.
So, all right, so getting back to the matter of faith, what I would like to show is that the idea of the Torah of faith is completely the opposite of the idea of Christianity and other religions of faith. And you know, we have a statement, a traditional statement. The source is, I can't say how far back the source goes, but the statement is that the mind of the ignoramus is exactly the opposite of the mind of Torah. And I found that to be practically always true. And that's why the idea of faith that the world at large maintains is completely the opposite of Torah. Because Torah tells you, as a matter of fact, that idea of faith, I will show you where the Torah itself tells us not to employ that idea. And that is in the case of the false prophet. Where the false prophet, even though his predictions come true, God says, I'm testing you to see whether you really believe in Torah. What does that mean? The question is, if this man is doing these miracles, why don't I say his miracles are correct? The answer is because the events at Sinai are conclusive miracles. The fact that a voice was, that God produced a voice which enunciated the entire Torah and which gave people ideas, that is, in front of the entire nation, that is the only event that we base our conviction on. Not belief, not people that do things, predictions or whatever it might be. That is not what we. That's where belief comes in, and belief takes a person away from Torah. What God wants to see is: are we going to follow these primitive kind of emotions and beliefs, or are we going to stick with the knowledge that we have based upon the concrete evidence of the event at Sinai? That is really the test. So what the world considers as religious and having faith, we consider just the opposite as being irreligious and giving way to emotional tendencies of belief. Now, it's very interesting, but the word in Hebrew, there's no word in Hebrew for belief. We have two words in the Torah. One word is emunah, and the other word is bitachon. Now, if you look at the root of these words, it has nothing to do with belief. The word emunah means verification. And it's used in a few places in the Torah. It's used by Joseph. When Joseph told the brothers, he says, you fellas claim that you're good citizens. I'm accusing you of being spies. He says to them, you said you had a younger brother. Well, go back home and bring back that younger brother, and I'm going to interrogate him. We'll see, he says, whether you... That's where he used the word emunah. He says, whether what you say will be verified. Now, that has nothing to do with faith. That has to do with verification. Proof. Evidence. Now, when the Torah says that the children of Israel believed in God at the sea, it means it was verified to them. That's what it means. It doesn't mean they believed in God. If there was just belief in God, like a Christian believes, I believe, I feel it, I believe, they wouldn't need any miracles, they wouldn't need any Sinai, they wouldn't need any kind of evidence at all. On the contrary, the more evidence you're giving them, as I said before, you're taking away the religion from them. But when it says they believed, it was because of what they saw with their own eyes at the sea. So the word emunah means verification. You have the word again in the Torah, for instance, where the priest tells the wife that's brought to the priest in the temple, when it's a question of whether she lived with another man or not, and she has to drink the waters. You may be familiar with that part of the Torah. So the Kohen makes a swear, and he states, he enunciates the swear, and she says, Amen. That's Amen. That you're familiar with. Amen doesn't mean I believe. It means I verify, I affirm. It's nothing to do with belief. That's a complete mistranslation. It's unfortunate that the English term, which is commonly used, is not the term of the Bible. And the other word for belief in God is bitachon. That word means security. In Israel, when they say the bitachon, they mean the security. They're referring to like police and security. So bitachon means security. There are two concepts in relationship to God. One is that a person has verification. It means it's verified to him. When he knows that God exists and he knows the Torah is true, then in his own personal life, even though he sees things which to him, like for instance by Abraham, it says Abraham believed in God. What does it mean? It means that God told him that you're going to have offspring, and he knew that what God told him was true. He knew he was an old man, but he knew he did not allow his emotions to overpower his intellect. His intellect told him, if God says this, then it has to come true. Even though the God that he knew up to that point was not a God that changed nature. He was God that was the source of all nature. But now he was receiving prophecy, and God was telling him, I'm going to make a change in nature for this, for you. And he couldn't understand that precisely. As a matter of fact, it was something astonishing to him. If you remember, he laughed. He says, is it possible that a man of 100 will have offspring, and a woman, Sarah, who's 90 years old? Abraham was not a believer. That wouldn't be a problem. You take one of these religious believers, they believe anything. They believe that right away, immediately, without God telling them. But Abraham had trouble believing that, because his idea of God was the God that is the source of all creation, the God that loves his creation, the God that does not change and distort nature. And he couldn't understand, he wasn't comfortable with the concept that God is going to make a distortion in nature. Nature is God's wisdom, God's knowledge. So to him it was, he left, he couldn't understand it. But nevertheless, the Torah praises him, because since he knew that God is the source of all creation, even though to him it seems strange and odd, to him it was verified that this is going to occur. That is where so when you read that verse, you shouldn't read it, and he believed in God. You should read it, and it was verified to him that what God said is going to occur, because his knowledge of God prevailed over the other part of his nature, which couldn't understand, which questioned, and which raised difficulties about how that's going to take place. But he stuck with his knowledge. That's what emunah means. And bitachon, the word security, means also the concept that a person senses and feels that his security is not his family, it's not his friends, it's not his money, it's not his status, not his good health. It is nothing other than God himself. That is the concept. That's what we mean by faith. By faith, the word faith is a terrible word. It's a religious word out there. It's not a Torah word. What we should substitute is two words. Verification in the mind, where I know that what God said is true, will occur. And the second component is a sense of security about the fact that that knowledge that I have will occur and is true. And that my security, my sense of security, is in my knowledge of God. Even though that knowledge is not of a physical nature, it's of an abstract nature, this is more real and more concrete to me than what I experience through my senses, because the senses are really not actually real. The senses are a result of certain interactions between my nervous system and the external world. What's real is the world of mind and the world of ideas and the world of thought, and God is the source of all knowledge and all wisdom, and that is what is truly real. That's where my security is. My security is in the ideas and the knowledge that God has given me. So the word faith is really not a Torah word. And it's pretty obvious from the Torah that the challenge of Torah is not to believe something that there's no verification. On the contrary, the challenge of Torah is when a person knows that the Torah is true, and he knows that God gave the Torah, he studies the Torah, and he sees the infinite wisdom in the Torah, and he sees that the Torah, which was written so many years ago, is far advanced over the most modern
Rabbi?
System. Yes.
All right, I just have to jump in then where I can. Don turns the controls down, and I jump.
Go right ahead. Go
for it. Okay. All right. Is the word Umanah not translated many times, if not most of the time, in the Hebrew writings as faith?
No, not really. You see.
No, I'm talking about. Now, wait a minute. Let me explain. I have some books that the word faith is used in.
That's right.
And the word that in the Hebrew that I see in the text, unless I'm missing it, is the word umanah. And they translate it faith.
Well, that's exactly what I'm addressing. I'm saying that translation, I would say that translation
Turn it up a little
is, is not correct. It's strictly speaking, that is not the meaning of the word. The meaning of the word emunah is not what we commonly mean by the term faith. It is a poor translation. I do not know of any word in English that comes closer to it, and because of that, that word is often employed. But that is not the proper word.
Okay, my point would be that, and I accept what you're saying because that's a conclusion that I've come to, what you've said.
Okay.
All right, but the point that I would make is like many other things, that when a word is used, history and tradition has forged a meaning of that word that has nothing whatsoever to do with the true meaning.
Exactly. You couldn't have said it better.
All right, so when I pick up these Jewish books, and they use the word faith, it projects the same concepts and ideas of faith that was taught in the Christian church.
That's correct. You're absolutely right. That's because those books are not written. That's because the books that are around today, many of those books, are not written by real scholars. But if you pick up the books of the real scholars of the Torah, Maimonides, Nachmanides, you pick up the books of the the Chovas Halvavos. Chovas Halvavos, the duties of the heart. The books from the real greats of Torah, you won't find that. That you won't find there. You'll only find it in some of these modern books, where, as you said, the writers have become so far away from the original meaning of the term that they themselves have become lost, and they've corrupted the whole notion. But when you go back to the original sources, you go back to the Torah itself, look at the word itself, how it's used constantly, and you will see that the word faith that is commonly used in religious circles is exactly the opposite of what the Torah is trying to instill in man. Torah is not trying to instill in man belief based upon emotions that charge him. That's not what the Torah wants. That's danger. That's when man deviates and goes off into the worst kinds of paths. I mean, that's the most, as they often say, the Torah recognizes the most dangerous emotion in man is the religious emotion. That is the most dangerous one. That's why the Torah keeps railing against idolatry all the time. What is idolatry? Idolatry is a very religious people. They give their lives and their children's lives for their beliefs. They are extremely, you know, people look at idolaters, they look down at them. Well, these people are idolaters, and Abraham is a great hero. That's very nice after the fact. But do you realize that Abraham was considered, in his town, he was considered, and Maimonides points this out in his guide, he was considered an irreligious man. Because here, these people were very religious. They went to their churches. They served their gods. They gave their lives for their gods. They gave their money, their children. These people were deeply religious people. They weren't just the individuals that were involved in their own pursuits of pleasure. That was Sodom was that way, but not Ur. That was a later development. But the Abraham appeared as a man who was questioning. This is all nonsense. You're doing all this for nothing. He told them basically to stop their entire religion and do nothing. Now, how would that appear in a religious society? He's rejecting the religion of the land. That's like the accusation was brought against Socrates. They said that you say that the moon is made out of rock. That was considered a horrible thing, that he's denying the god of the moon. So that was at a later date. Greece was much more advanced. And nevertheless, you see how upset the people were with that concept of saying the moon is made out of rock, where the Torah said it, of course, over 1,000 years before. But you can imagine, I mean, what it was to go against the religion. I mean, he was considered an irreligious individual. Okay? Are there any more questions on this point, or should I continue with what I was going to take up before?
I'll ask. Anybody got any questions here? Who? Charlie said he had a dozen, but he didn't think we got enough time on this 15-minute tape to handle them.
Okay.
See, here, and I want, let me just echo something that I said earlier. Torah, in amplifying what you said, Torah is reality in opposition to blind faith.
Exactly.
Torah is a verification. God said it, and then history verifies what God has already declared. All right. Religion demands faith in a system. It demands faith on, based in words without the verification.
Because there is no verification. It's based on nothing. So you must have faith.
It's based on nothing. As you said, the revelation that somebody gets in a cave or somewhere else.
Exactly.
Torah was proclaimed in the hearing of 2 million people. And then it was recorded and validated. In Deuteronomy 13, I think it's one of the most powerful passages in the entire Torah, where it talks about the prophet or the dreamer of dreams, and you quoted it, if he comes around and he makes statements, and even if they come to pass, it does not change Torah. And he shall surely die. And see, that's a very hard, a very difficult, if not impossible, concept for people to get, because there is so much emphasis put in the sense world.
Exactly.
And the sight world.
And what they call the spiritual world.
And the, that's the spiritual world. And so, see, the spirit moves, and then it's brought to the element of the physical world, so therefore it has to be.
That's correct.
The man says, well, someone has cancer, or someone is going to find a $100 bill or something, and then if they find it, then that person becomes a great prophet.
That's correct.
And then therefore they'll listen to anything he says. That's against Torah. It has to be Torah or nothing.
That's correct. As a matter of fact, my brother told me recently that someone, my brother mentioned to me recently that this person became a certain type of a chassid, you know, one of the Hasidim. Why? Because this Rebbe, the woman didn't have a child, and the Rebbe said that she will have a child next year at this and this time, and so it was. So my brother said, well, if a priest would have told your wife that, would you then become a Catholic? He said, well, he started to hesitate then. So my brother said, well, I don't understand. If this is a way of proving something, why wouldn't you do that? Well, you know. But the point is, as David made, that the Torah is against all such kind of proofs. The proof is the Torah itself, and the proof is Sinai, and that is it. If you're moved by these other kind of things, tomorrow you may become an idolater. Then you're prone to that, and the Torah does not want us to be prone to that. And just think about it this way. Is there any other religion in the world that promotes and insists upon a person studying, gaining knowledge? No religion maintains that knowledge is a religious activity. On the contrary, because religions know that the more knowledge you have, the more their beliefs are in danger. On the contrary, stay ignorant and believe in spite of knowledge. What was one of the, I think it was Tertullian, one of the, who says, we believe because it's absurd. In spite of the fact, because it's absurd, we believe it. So the religions promote the belief in the absurd. They don't promote knowledge. Torah is the only religion which obligates.
All right, Rabbi?
Yeah.
See, someone just brought to our attention the 13 Articles of Faith.
That's correct.
Now, see, when you begin reading the 13 Articles of Faith, we believe with perfect faith.
No, that the word believe is there. I checked that out, by the way. It does not.
I know it, but in the English, that's the way it's translated.
Let me.
We believe with perfect faith, and it goes on, and we believe with perfect faith, and we believe with perfect faith. And so, see, that is projecting to those that read in English that same philosophy that you have been speaking about.
Exactly.
And so if I say I believe with perfect faith, then I accept it without verification. I just believe it because it's said.
That's correct. Let me just give you the history of that, by the way, in the Hebrew. Give you the history of that. Those 13 articles of faith that you have in the, I assume you're reading it from a Siddur, those 13 articles, by the way, no one even knows who wrote that. I want you to know that. The original 13 articles were written by Maimonides. That we have. Over there it does not say anything. It doesn't even say the word emunah on that, in those 13 articles. It says to know. In those 13 articles of faith, it is all knowledge. It is not. Doesn't even say the word emunah in Hebrew there. But what happened was that, because the Maimonides states quite clearly In the very beginning of his book, he says the commandment is to know that there exists a creator. That's what he says. That there is a, that there exists a God, a creator. Now, he uses the word to know, and in Hebrew that word is leida. It means to know. It is more than just verification. It means to have direct knowledge, to actually have knowledge. So there's no question about that. Now, what happened was like this, that someone decided it's a good idea to say those, to recite those 13 articles every day. That was done in the medieval period. I don't know when, maybe the 15th century, around there somewhere. But they thought it'd be a good idea for people to, you know, to become familiar with them, or at least to know something about them, because they're all abbreviated. They're one line over there, whereas you look at the original Maimonides, they're pages, pages. So someone decided it'd be a good idea. No one knows who that person was, and he wrote it down in that manner. And he used the word emunah, which I said over here, even that word emunah is not proper, because there's a difference in Hebrew between emunah, which means verification, and yediyah, which means direct knowledge. Okay? Direct knowledge is a higher level. Now, the commandment of the 13 articles of faith is knowledge, really. And I'll explain this. I'll explain this a little further. But let me just give you this point, that the reason why the author wrote, used the word emunah, and didn't use the word yidi'ah, which means actual knowledge, is because since he wanted a person to recite it every day, it would be too arrogant for a person to say, I know with perfect knowledge that God is the creator of the universe. I know with perfect knowledge that God is not physical. I know with perfect knowledge that God is one. Because these are very abstract things and they're very deep ideas, and you could know them on a basic level, which everybody's obligated to know them, but there is a much, much deeper level of understanding of those principles. So it would be arrogant and false for a person to say every day after the prayer, well, I know with perfect knowledge that God is... You don't know with perfect knowledge. You may have knowledge at your level, but you don't have perfect knowledge. So that's why he substituted for the word knowledge of yediyah, he substituted the word emunah. But the word emunah, as I said, does not mean empty belief. Emunah means a belief that's based on some kind of verification. Okay? Yediyah means even more than that. Now, let me give you an example. You see, in the Torah, there's only one time that we use the word emunah, by the way, with regard to religion. And that is when we're speaking about the details of God's reward and punishment system. That's where the prophet uses the word. Because over there we can't have any yediyah. We cannot have any knowledge. We can have knowledge of abstract ideas in God's Torah. We can have knowledge of God's existence. We can have knowledge of God's oneness. We can have knowledge of the commandments of the Torah. But we cannot have any knowledge of God's precise acts insofar as the world of reward and punishment is concerned. We cannot have any knowledge of the fact that Messiah, when he will come, that he will come at this point or at that point, or whether this particular person is going to have a good life, a bad life, or whatever it is. We don't know. That's an area where we do not have any knowledge. Over there, we use the word emunah, because what we mean by that is that we know that God will give a righteous person his reward, the proper reward, in a general way. And that is verified in our minds. But the knowledge of the details is impossible for a human being to have in his mind. That's why, by the way, that word emunah is always used with regard to, the prophets use it, with regard to reward and punishment. It's used in the Bible with regard to reward and punishment, where it says, we say God is the faithful God. What we mean by the faithful God is that he rewards and he punishes depending on how a person lives. So the that's the verse, by the way. It's in Deuteronomy 7:9. And the Moses says, you should know that God your God, he is God. He is the faithful God, and then he continues. He's the God that keeps the covenant and the kindness to those who love him and to those who follow and to those who keep his commandments for 1,000 generations, which means to say that he gives infinite amount of reward to those who... now, there we say he is the faithful God. That's what we mean when we say we have faith in God. We don't mean we have faith in the sense that we have faith that he exists. That's not what we mean. We know God exists. But we can't possibly know how he's going to reward us, but that is verified in our minds that he will, because we know that God is truth, and that God will do what he says he does. That's where the word emunah comes in. The word yiddi'ah, knowledge, comes in where we have knowledge of a principle, an idea, a law of the Torah, a principle of faith. There our minds can grasp it insofar as we can fully, you see. But our minds have no way of ever knowing how God gives, meets out reward and punishment. That only the creator of the universe himself knows. So over there we use the word, it's verified to us that it will occur. But we can't use the word knowledge, because knowledge would imply that we actually know what's going to happen or how God really rewards a person or punishes a person. That's beyond our scope. So that's why you have those two terms, three terms really. One is knowledge, that's knowledge of the principles of faith, knowledge of Torah, that God demands of us that we have first-hand knowledge. It's not enough to have faith in that case. Even emunah wouldn't be enough. Like I say, well, the rabbi tells me that this is what I'm supposed to do, so it's verified to me that this is the proper thing to do. That would be an example of emunah. But God wants more than that. He doesn't want it just to be verified to you that it's so, even though the rabbi may be intelligent. He wants you to know it yourself firsthand. He wants you to study it and know it. Okay? That would be an example, a good example of the difference between yiddi'ah, knowledge, and emunah. We say we have emunat chachamin. It means I have to use the word. We have faith in the wise. It doesn't mean faith. What it means is we know if a person is wise. If you go to a physician and he has knowledge of medicine and he gives you a medication, you wouldn't say you have faith in the physician. It means you know that this man has given you the proper medication. When we say faith in the physician, we mean we're not sure he knows what he's doing, where he doesn't have any. It's not based on any kind of knowledge, but he's going off into some area where it was unknown. Said, well, I have faith in him. That's not what the Torah wants. The Torah wants verification. So when it comes to Torah, emunah is not enough. Even though it's verified to you that this is the proper procedure, God wants you to have yiddiyah, first-hand knowledge. So that's where God demands of us that we study and gain knowledge. On the other hand, in the area of...
We've got 60 seconds, precisely.
On the other hand, in the area of God's reward and punishment, over there, the Torah kind of tells us to keep away. Don't try to get too involved in that. And that's why the rabbis of Talmud said, don't try to figure out when the Messiah is going to come. Don't try to figure out the ends of time. It is true that even the scholars of the Talmud speculated about it, but they knew very well it's mere speculation, and a person can indulge it in certain kind of entertainment, as long as he recognizes it's entertaining, its possibilities. But if he thinks, once he starts thinking that he knows that the Messiah is coming when, and he knows that this is the end of time, he really knows it, then he is moving out of his position as man, and he's moving into God's position. That is dangerous. There the Torah says, that's when you're trying to use yiddiyah, knowledge, when you should be under emunah, where you know it's verified that what will happen, and although you must admit to yourself that you do not have any real knowledge of the particulars. So there's a time, according to the Torah, there's a time for knowledge, and there's a time for emunah. Not faith, but a kind of knowledge where you know generally you know what's going to happen, but not real specific knowledge of the details. And if you override those boundaries, you get into big trouble. And the beauty of Torah is that the prophets and the Torah has set out for us a course to guide us so we don't get lost by our emotions and we keep on the proper path. And this, I think, is the most important area, the area of where you're supposed to have knowledge.
Okay, we are out of time.